And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast.
What are you going to do with all those chips in your hands?
I'm going to eat them. I'm going to eat them while you're talking. God knows I could eat a whole fucking bag of them. It's only 8 pounds.
You could. I was at 64.
64. What? Oh, episode 64. I was at Costco the other day.
Speaking of large bags of stuff.
Do you know they sell cake frosting in like a 3 gallon bucket?
Really? I mean, it makes sense, right? They're selling to, you know.
Right, but holy crap.
But yeah, that's like heaven, right?
That was right. Why are we shopping for anything else?
Like, I got my bucket. When's the Super Bowl on?
Exactly. Oh, man. If they had around when you ended a relationship, that'd be perfect,
yeah,
right?
You'd be like, what? Did you leave? I don't even know.
He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com. I am Michael Gugis. You can find my rantings on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. I'm the guy on a very cool bike doing very stylish things at a very low speed at a racetrack near you. And this is Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast that if you cut it down and count the rings at the core, you find genius. Ed, what are we going to talk about today?
You see those numbers up on the wall?
Right. 1-1-1-2-1.
Yes. I got two more ones.
Two more ones? Which ones?
I took it?
Which ones?
Yeah,
thank you.
That was good. Right. I took the Wira West Championship last year for the F Superstock, so the 250s. And E Superstock, so 300.
Well done.
And super bad.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I finished on the podium in V8 heavyweight.
Excellent.
Yep, I was third in the championship. I ran one race.
You don't have to tell people that.
Hey, right? 5 years later, it doesn't say how many people were in the race on the trophy.
It just says one.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters.
So check this out.
What is it?
Not pretty, isn't it?
It is kind of, actually. So it's blue, this red,
is,
yeah, some gold.
This is a Olin's shock from a Ducati.
Yes, not a Olin shock.
Well, it is.
Grammar is no joke, motherfucker.
Okay. I said Ann.
I know. Somebody sent me that picture today.
So it's an Olin shock from a Ducati. I forget the exact Ducati at the moment. The reason it has this cool blue on the spring is that it matches the guy's bike.
Okay.
So I took a spring and I had it powder coated.
Right.
Which is, you know, something I do sometimes.
You can do that?
I don't powder coat them myself. I just go to a powder coating place.
How much is it?
I charge $30.
Really?
Retail.
That's,
you know, to the
awesome.
Customer.
There's a, that's he's a down huge, the street. That's a huge deal for me.
Yeah, if you paint a spring, it never
say.
Works.
Right.
But powder coating, when they come out of the box, they're powder coated.
Oh.
So the powder coating place sandblasts the old stuff off. And then they have every freaking color under the sun.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
Super nice, yeah. And, you know, it's not a big deal. Most bikes, you can't really see the spring. But,
you know what?
It's
especially
nice.
Especially on race bikes.
So, anyway, this shock came with the Olin's remote hydraulic preload adjuster.
Right.
Which is kind of a silly thing to have. It's not like you need to be changing your
preload
every
yeah.
time you ride the bike.
Or in the middle of the ride.
But,
really.
Yeah, people like them. So anyway, this guy is modifying the bike. He's changing stuff around. I'm not clear on exactly everything he's doing, but getting rid of stuff is basically his thing. He's going for a more plain, less fancy look.
Well, that's cool.
And so when I told him, so he had a problem with, I forget, something was a little bit messed up. And I said, well, you know, I could just take the thing off and put the regular collars on. And he's like, oh, that'd be great. And then he needed a different length hose so he could put the reservoir in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And the hose was old enough that it started to turn a little bit yellow where the coating is on the braided steel. So check out this hose that Penske made for me. Watch this.
Wow, it pivots.
It pivots. On
wow.
the mandrel bolt, it pivots all the way around. So which is really nice. I think this is from the car world that they came up with the pivots, because with the car world, you got four identical shocks,
right?
But they need them, you know, two of them are mounted on the front and two of them in their back. And with this, now the reservoir can go to the front or the back, and you don't need a specific hose setup. You can have one assembly.
You don't have to worry about which
four.
Way it's coming out of the shock.
Yeah, you can change it as necessary. So,
oh my
right?
God.
So these hoses cost a little bit more than the regular just thread directly in type hoses, but it's a really nice feature. And of course, they got this nice dark coating on there, and then there's this really cool black and white LE sticker.
Are we going to have a picture of it?
I'll put a picture on my blog. Yes, good idea. So, you know, I did a rebuild, a revalve, and a respring for the guy's weight, all the normal stuff. And then we changed the spring to blue, and we removed the preload thing and put a different collar on, and then the different hose, and just came out really nice. His forks are over there, and the fork tubes are getting re-chromed, so the bike's been around the block. And then I'm doing everything to the forks also. So this goes back so he can get the bike off the rear stand, and then when the spring, the re-chrome is done, then he gets the forks.
I'm confused. It's a blue spring.
Yes, on a Ducati.
Yeah.
I didn't ask.
Okay, good strategy.
He could have painted it blue. I don't know.
Are they allowed to do that?
Maybe.
I didn't know Ducati.
You have to get UN clearance, but our friend Lynn Jarvis is working there now. he approved it. I don't know. Maybe it has blue wheels.
You know, that might be.
Maybe it's actually secretly a Yosh bike with a blue chain.
Or maybe it's one of those, you know, what was I going to say? Who was a, didn't Cook Nielsen or Paul Nielsen, I can't remember who it was, had really cool old blue Ducatis back in the day, but I digress. Anyway, that's a great feature. If you've ever had to try to install a shock, you go through all the effort, you try to put it in, and the fucking nitrogen valve is in the wrong place, or the stupid banjo bolt is in the wrong place, that's worth the extra money.
Well, from my perspective, right, I'm on the phone here in my shop with the shock.
Right.
And he's on the phone and it is next to the motorcycle.
Right.
And I'm saying, okay, you get yourself a piece of fuel hose and you figure out how long you want it to be. How long is that? 15 inches. Okay. And that's going to be to the center, right? Okay, good. Okay, now how do you want the banjo, right? You're trying to do this over there?
Right, exactly.
These things pivot and it's you know, they don't pivot in the plane. They just go around and around.
Right.
But it just makes it that much more
easier,
likely or to fit,
right?
When he actually gets the thing,
you're,
right?
When you're putting
so
the bike,
I'm liking that.
When the bike, you're putting the bike together, that'd be worth it. You know, yeah. It's like having, you know what? It's like having captive spacers on your rear wheel.
All those things are like the having all the hardware holding your bodywork on. Take only one tool,
fastener,
right? Not one fastener, one tool.
Right. One.
The fasteners can be different. You just need one tool to do
it. Did I tell you I bought captive rear spacers for one of my SVs, and Sandy thanked me. She was like, oh God, I'm just so tired of chasing spacers around the garage when you change tires.
You know, I learned that from Gary Kiesel when I was first starting racing, and he was doing some stuff to his bike, and I'm like, what are you doing that for? And it was the same kind of thing. I don't remember what the thing was,
uh-huh.
But it was like an hour's worth of work to do this one thing, but
once.
Then it saves him, you know, 20
right.
minutes every time he didn't lose the part, right?
Right.
Over time. And that's one of the key things to bike prep, like we talked about in the last episode with the Yamaha M1, is that you're maximizing the time at the track.
Yes.
When you have a limited amount of time,
right.
And you didn't have to do this silly thing to get that part off to do
mm-hmm.
this other thing, right? You just went straight to it and did it. It's totally worth it.
Yep.
The complete opposite of the KTM 390 swing arm shock removal chain guard. That was
how
it.
How is the counseling going on that issue, Ed? I mean, that is, are you guys making any progress?
You know,
your meds?
It's funny, right? It's really easy to give other people advice. You need to let that go, my friend.
Right?
Don't tell
no,
me
don't
to let something go.
Damn it. Nobody ever lets anything go anyway, Ed.
So
it's
Paul,
all just incorporated.
Paul who?
And
the R1.
Paul Denning. He's a guy from Crescent, now Crescent Yamaha, after years of it being Crescent Suzuki. It's now Crescent Yamaha, and they're going to race.
And therein is another great example of why
Superbike.
You should never badmouth the other company, because they might become your sponsor.
Did you see Lorenzo criticize HJC?
Nope.
Not a word. Not a word of criticism.
Yep.
Thank you very much for the, you know, he didn't say the
suitcase
is full
of money. You know, that is a great point, right?
Right?
I mean, we could all see that he was probably not going to stay with them the next year.
Yeah.
And there was no bullshit.
Right?
Right. He just quietly changed.
He's a professional.
Yeah, exactly, right? You don't need to be... It's not like they make a bad helmet.
Right.
Right? You know?
Exactly.
And let's face it, it's Lorenzo, right? That amount of fog, many people probably wouldn't notice.
Yeah,
right?
He's pretty particular.
Doing it that perfect,
right?
And what's really going on there, I think, is... It's not that you can't see out of a fogged visor. It's that now you're not thinking about...
You're focusing on that.
Something has changed, right? And for a guy that's got to be so focused, one so less, and he's hosed.
You're in trouble. No, what was I going to say? I talk about this all the time in class. And I apologies to Keith Code, but I stole the idea from him. Then you have $1 worth of attention.
$10 or $100, however you want to
however
call
you
it,
want to spend it.
Up. Yep.
Is, no, is totally up to you. True. And paying attention to that little bit of fog right there.
Oh yeah.
At, you down. Know, when you were doing when you're trying to do on a motorcycle what he does. Yeah. And as you can tell, dear listener, Ed and I are big Lorenzo fans. You know, just
kind of hard not to be.
You know, lots of
guy
people
rides that well.
Lots of people don't
you
like
know,
him.
There's a lot of people that say that Casey Stoner was a whiner.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
who
right?
cares, right? His job is to ride a motorcycle fast. If he gets off and cries, what's it got
exactly,
to do
with exactly, you know? Right? And they say, well, but George, they just, George you know. Does. George lacks personality. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, I got good personality.
Yeah,
I'm, like name yeah. somebody who's really good at anything who is not socially awkward. Give the guy a fucking break for crying out loud while you sit behind your computer on Facebook. You're so cool.
If you've ever seen if you've ever seen the movie Le Mans with Steve McQueen, you know, it's somebody wrote a comment on it once and they said it was great because it was an illustration of the idea that usually incredible accomplishments are done by people who are deeply flawed.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
well. They're just bent in such a way that they're not, they don't have good relations with the world around them. They tweak something, and if you're lucky, it tweaks it in such a way that something
that you can make money for.
Right?
It. You can sell it.
Incredible
yeah.
skill.
Exactly. If you're unlucky, then you go to jail because of whatever right. the fuck you did was not cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's totally true, right? I mean, look at all of the professionals, athletes, sports playing
Absolutely.
Guys, football player guys who can't even have a decent marriage.
Right?
Well, who let me back up. Can't even have a decent marriage. Like, probably the hardest thing you will ever do is have good relationships, especially
right.
being married, right? It's a full-time job,
right?
Why do young people have trouble with relationships?
They're
because
not good
they
at being
think,
human beings yet.
Yeah, and they think it's just going to happen. They don't understand that it's work,
right?
They want to just meet the perfect person, and they have this list, right? We all had a list
right.
at some point. It needs to be blah, blah, blah.
What do you mean,
you can't have
a
list?
I still have a list. I read it to Sandy every morning. All right, listen. And that's why I sleep in the office a lot. By the way, do you know where we went on Halloween? For our date? Did I tell you?
You and I did not go on a date.
No,
Halloween.
No, Sandy and
you
I.
And Sandy.
You and I went on a date next night. No, okay. There's an abandoned graveyard in a non-existent town in Southern California called Spadra. And the Preservation Society does a Halloween tour of the graveyard.
Oh, cool.
It used to be a roadhouse for the stagecoach. There's no telling how many people are actually in that graveyard because the graveyard was owned by the guy who owned the town. And so if there was a fight in the roadhouse and you got killed, well, there was a very good chance that nobody outside of Spadra would ever hear about it. I thought that was awesome.
That's a good place for Halloween. Did we talk about Paul?
No.
Did we cover
Okay, Paul Denning's the guy. He's running a Crescent Yamaha this year. In World Superbike. And we've talked before about the M1 and how amazing it is, how it works on a wide variety of platforms. The bike, it doesn't matter what rule package you throw at it, it still wins. He offered an insight into why that was, and I thought it was really interesting. We talk about racing improves the breed. We talk about how racing makes bikes better. But we think about things like disc brakes or shifting and things like that. In other words, we think about technology and features and, you know, that sort of thing, right? What he said was Yamaha's built the M1 for so long, and it was based on probably what most people consider the best handling of the 500cc GP bikes. So what they've got, geometry, flex numbers, all of those things that they can build into a bike, and they've got a platform that they know is going to result in a really good handling motorcycle. And I don't care what else you do to a bike, if you've got a good handling motorcycle at its core, then you can put peripherals on it and modify that. But I thought that was a really interesting insight. Well, the transition from racing to the street bike, the R1 that's so freaking good on the street, is something that you can't see.
You know,
it doesn't have a label. It's just knowledge, pure knowledge about how to build a good handling bike.
I agree. It's a
well. Then
it's
we
a
can
company.
Stop. He said so.
it's a company philosophy that's not just broad, but it's long in time. It's evolutionary through the whole right. Everybody there is working towards the same kind of thing, which is to have this bike that works in the maximum Right? And they're willing to let somebody kick their ass at the one-off weirdo track.
Right.
Right? And then the other team kicked their ass at this other. Meanwhile, they finished second at that place, right?
Right.
And that's how you win championships. And that's, I think, the beauty of the series is a championship. It's not a sprint race. It's not the Daytona 200. It's not one event.
Right.
Right. You have to make something that works in the real world.
Well, the other thing.
An idea when we were talking about how great the R1M is, or the R1 is. And all great things have to have a balance, right?
Yes,
you have a genius.
There you go.
You have a genius race driver, he has to have bad something.
Well, right.
So it turns, and we wondered what was going to be the problem with the R1.
What?
Turned out to be a production problem. They have a recall in the transmission.
Okay.
So now, once your R1 transmission has been fixed, you're good to go. You're perfect.
It's been pre-disastered. You know, I just thought that was really kind of cool and a nice little initial insight into human successes. It's not an individual. It's usually an accumulation of knowledge and people who know how to apply it. And that's the depth of that knowledge that makes. It's the depth of the knowledge and the commitment to going racing that makes the bike so good.
That's the thing that NASA aims for, to have that really big team.
Oh, I've got a NASA thing too.
Okay.
But go ahead.
No, it's just that simple, right? To have that, they have to have this huge team to do what they're trying to do because it's so difficult.
Right.
Like you compare build a great race bike to space work, like, oh my God, it's not even, right? We think we're geniuses. Shit.
Exactly.
Right? Well, the James Webb telescope is launching soon.
Okay.
So that's the bigger, badder Hubble.
Really?
Like 100 times stronger than the Hubble or something. So the Hubble has one mirror, one lens, and the Webb is a multifaceted lens setup. It's tunable, so you have all these different mirrors, and you can wiggle them and change the angle to tune the frequency and whatever, and it's going to be able to look, I don't know farther, how much farther, but like remember, right, we had pictures from telescopes on Earth,
right?
And then we got the Hubble. It's like, oh my God,
right?
Because you're not looking through the atmosphere,
right? Exactly.
And so anyway, it's going to be the same.
The moon
thing
really
again.
Is made of cheese.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's going to be some cool shit. We're gonna learn in our lifetimes something right now that nobody knows. In a couple of years, we're all going to get to see a picture of a thing that nobody's seen before, and it's going to explain something that we didn't expect. It's going to be completely new.
Some alien is going to be extending
somebody's
one tentacle.
Somebody's going to be sticking a finger out. Yeah, something.
Exactly.
It's going to be cool.
Like, dear God, please stop sending political talk shows into space. Or we come nuke your butts.
What was the name of that really cool cartoon show where the Thunderbirds are ghosts?
Yes, Thunderbirds.
They had an episode where people living far away in another galaxy sent us a warning that we were about to have a war. And so we're like, oh, shoot, we got to get this message from them. And then when we received the message, it was the opening moves. It was too late. We hadn't listened in time. And they sent us pictures of the opening moves of World War I. Because, right, it takes that long for the images to reach them. And
but
then
they recognize the pattern.
That was the whole episode, was explaining to us, the viewer, how that time gap, by the time the pictures of World War I could get to them, and then they could send a message to us, it was much too late.
Yeah, the other people can see things before we can
see
them.
So sorry, I totally digressed us into this space.
That's okay. We're not quite done.
I got nothing on motorcycles.
And here is, we got plenty on motorcycles.
Okay, good.
Here's the really problematic thing. We talked about geniuses, brilliant in one place, not brilliant in another. So I mentioned we were on family vacation this weekend. There was a van involved. The house has a private movie theater in it. Nice house, okay? Big screen TV.
But it doesn't have a shop, does it?
I don't know. I never got out of the theater. So I'm in there. I don't know. We've dosed the kids and locked them in a closet, okay? Because Jesus Christ, right? Thank God for condoms. I'm in the theater, and there's
how many bikes could you buy if you didn't have those kids that you have now for the price of a condom?
Right? No kidding, right? How hard could you ride if you didn't have to worry about
it? All the people who are listening to our show that have kids are like, fuck you.
Exactly. Right now, they're going to come find us.
Who's going to take care of you when you're old?
Right? There's a very good possibility that we've got it all wrong. Yes, blah, blah, blah. But right now,
you were in the theater.
Right? And I'm flicking through the channels. It's like the NASA channel comes on. I'm like, this is awesome. Space. How could this go wrong? I fell asleep in 7 minutes.
Oh, man.
Because, Ed, they managed to take space exploration and make it boring beyond words. Oh, my God.
You can usually do that when you get too technical on anything,
was,
right?
That was exactly it. And they kept trying to dumb it down and
That's why Neil deGrasse Tyson is so good. He's really good at... Did you hear his rap?
Apparently
believes the earth is flat. He has a rap about how Tyson is wrong and he's part of the conspiracy. And so Tyson's brother or friend or somebody made a rap for him that replies. But here's the best one. There was some kind of talk show program.
Okay.
Along the standard format. And so the host is talking about this, and then he goes, I don't do this very often, and he grabs a red button, and he pushes the red science emergency button. Boop, 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 and Tyson shows up. Like, he's in the middle of dinner. He's got dinner with him. And so he gives Tyson the mic to answer all this stuff. So Tyson takes off his shirt. He's got a black T-shirt underneath. And he's talking about the curvature of the Earth is too... big for people, creatures crawling on its surface to be able to see it, yada, yada, all these scientific answers. And in the end, you know what he does?
Huh.
He does the best mic drop ever. He holds the mic out and he goes, gravity. I thought you'd appreciate that.
I do.
Because you like mic drops.
All right. What else we got on motorcycles?
We kind of used it all up.
No, no, not really.
We
got Crespo.
Crespo.
What up, Rick? Yo.
Off-season training.
Yeah, what should you be doing right now, Ed? If you've raced at the AMA level at the absolute height of your superpowers, what were you doing on February 7th?
Anything that helped with stamina, with endurance, nothing to do with strength. Right? So,
okay.
And I don't do anything for sprint racing. I did race 6 laps long for crying out loud. If you can't do that, you're hanging on too tight. Or you're in medical trouble and you need to go see a doctor.
You should stop listening to this and go to the doctor.
Yeah, no, really. The main thing, the reason people get tired is they're hanging on to the bike. They're gripping the bike with a death grip. And nobody, it doesn't matter how strong you are, if you squeeze your muscles as hard as you can,
for six laps, you're going to be fatigued.
You get all tired really fast. And it makes you hold your breath. And then so then you get behind on your oxygen and it's just a disaster. And then beyond that, as we've talked about many times, it's more important how long you push on the handlebars, not how hard. So it doesn't take a lot of work, physical strength. And the training that the guys do at the pro level is to be able to be smart at the end of a 45-minute event in a suit when it's 120 degrees outside the suit.
And the reason that you're doing that is to make sure you're spending as little time thinking about your physical well-being as possible as to maximize the amount of thinking you can do about your riding.
When you get tired, before you get physically tired, you start to lose mental capacity.
Concentration.
And so that's the purpose of their training. And a great example of this is Ben Spies 1 year deliberately stopped working out upper body stuff, deliberately atrophied his upper body
to lose weight
because he didn't need that strength. He needed some strength in the lower body to hang onto the bike with your legs, but you don't need muscle. And you know, look at Lorenzo, right? He's not King Kong, he's not Schwarzenegger. None of those guys are big.
Right.
Like, I look down to Kenny Roberts. And I'm 5'6", okay? There's not a lot of people that are shorter than me. Most of those guys are 5'5 or so.
Be terrified to talk to him face to face.
Look at
himself in the balls, man. What's he going to do to me?
No, there's a lot of more ways to be tough than to just have Arnold Schwarzenegger's body, right?
Right.
Look at Pedroza. The guy is every bit as fast as the other three aliens. Mm-hmm. And how much does he weigh?
112 pounds.
So how much can he lift then?
Not
much more than 112, right?
Adam Ant. Exactly.
Right? It's not about strength. So whatever exercising you're doing and proper eating and all that stuff, it's far more important that you do it for your long-term health than you worry.
Very
now,
good.
If motorcycle racing is the thing that gives you the momentum, the motivation to get out and do some
stuff. That's exactly why I run every day. I want to still fit in my leathers.
Yeah, and you want to balance that. Like, I don't run anymore. Why? Because my knee doesn't work as well as it used to.
Right.
And I'm not going to burn up my knee so that I can't walk later.
Right.
Right? To just so I can run now. So I would ride a bicycle.
Right.
You know, whatever. Find something, or swim. Find something to do that works for your whatever condition you're in.
Right.
And do the amount that you can enjoy.
And even if you don't race, you'll enjoy the track days more. You know, it's a ball to be the guy out there on the last two sessions of a track day when everybody else has gone home. Yep. They're worn out. You're
better off eating properly.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, let's say you have X amount of energy you can spend on being healthier. Okay, you're going to get more gain by stop drinking soda and drinking beer and eating fatty foods than you are going to be by just going out and exercising.
If change your diet a little bit of exercise. If you could run a mile a day, you'd be shocked at the difference it would make.
You don't even have to run. You can just walk.
Or walk. Yeah.
You know what you can do?
Huh.
Stand up desk if you're a person who has
it. There you go.
So for whatever your personal thing is, okay?
But
you don't need strength.
Right.
You do need endurance. And then you can do mental exercises.
Right.
To be mentally strong.
Run
the
laps.
Think about getting yourself into that place in your head, ready to compete, ready to think, and whatever, that kind of stuff. That's my advice.
But hold on, but I've got another question.
Yep.
Which is machine prep, early February.
Yes.
Where should you be?
Well, you know, I don't know. I feel like I'm beating my head against a wall on this, right? When was the last time you washed your bike, Michael?
Which one?
The one you raced this past weekend.
Let's see. Last time I got it back from the shop here.
So you haven't watched it since the race yet?
Not yet.
Yeah.
I've got until February 28th.
So the bike comes off the transporter after the race weekend, and it gets washed. And it gets washed right away so that you have the whole month to deal with whatever you just discovered because you were washing it.
I already know exactly what I need to deal with, but go on.
But you haven't looked. You don't know about the things you don't know about. So the vast majority of people never wash their bikes, right?
Well, I get that, but I'm talking about more along the lines of preparing for the upcoming season.
So your point is that people won't do the basic maintenance, but they are excited about doing off-season stuff, and they will do that?
Some things
so off-season jobs that you need to do are, guess what?
But,
wash your bike!
Oh, Lord.
Well, no. You want to work on it when it's dirty? No.
No.
But okay, wash your bike.
There's clean, and then there's this mythical state of Ed that's called Ed
Eric
clean.
Anderson called me up the other day.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
He goes, I'm working on my bike, and it's never been this clean before.
Right.
Well, yeah, motherfucker, because I washed it.
What have
it
you done? What have you done to my bike? Right.
It always starts with cleaning the bike.
Right.
Why? Because it's easier to work on when it's clean.
Okay.
And you're looking at the bike up close, and you'll notice all the things that might be going wrong before it's too late.
Other than maintenance.
Chain and sprock. Okay. Other than maintenance.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Somebody who's changing, who's going to race a new bike.
Nothing other than maintenance.
Somebody's going to race a new bike this year. Somebody who's...
Oh, you're cheating. No. I don't want to wash my bike. I'll buy a new one.
That's not
like
cheating.
Like all the factory teams do.
That's being intellectual. No, it's somebody who's riding a new bike, somebody who's just getting started doing it, somebody who's coming back into it after a while. You don't spend... As Jeff Stern said, I think we were a thing. It's like, he came in, it's like, yeah, I just spent the 6 hours last night putting my bike together.
I assume that's not your preferred method of preparing a racing motorcycle.
No, if you want to get ready with a new bike, you need to, you know, decide what stuff you're going to do.
And
then you need to start doing that.
And
right?
In early February, where should you be? Should you have all the material in hand already?
Well, you're the problem with that is the reality is it's budget controlled.
Okay.
Right? So you have to decide, what do I have to go racing, right?
Good.
I have to have...
Now we're getting somewhere.
Different tires. I have to have catch fairing body work. I have to have... Right?
Right.
Can I afford body work and paint at the same time? Yes? Okay, great. Buy it from a place that can do both, and they package it up and send it to you.
Right.
I can't afford to paint also because I also have to buy a steering damper. Okay, send me the gray bodywork. I'll install that later on.
Right.
I'll paint it. Right. That's, and so then you end up doing some work multiple times. You have to put the bodywork on for a while. Take it off, clean it, send it back to get painted, whatever.
Right.
If at all possible, paint your bodywork before it even comes to you, folks.
Really?
Yeah, well, you're going to get the primer all dirty. And the primer is porous, so now it's soaked in all the oil and crap, and it's a whole bunch of work to clean it off and sand it down, and the paint's not going to be as good. Okay.
Right, because the fiberglass is soaked in oil.
But you're gonna be drilling into painted bodywork.
It's way better than the paint doesn't care about drilling. You just go get a fiberglass stepped drill bit. It doesn't have any problem at all.
Okay.
And you don't leave fingerprints on the paint. It's got the clear coat already.
Right.
Wipes right off.
Okay.
Yeah. And paint the inside of your fairing black. God damn it.
That looks good.
It looks horrible when you don't do that.
No, it looks lighter that way.
That's true, though. It is the weight of the paint does make a difference. And so I only paint the upper fairing where I can see. Down below, not painted. Now, if you're MotoGP, then it's not fiberglass, it's carbon fiber.
Right.
It's already dark and it looks good.
Exactly. The last thing in the world you want to do is cover that stuff up with paint. No, I was just thinking about, people say they want to race, and it's like, you know, you do all these things, and then you forget to steps along the way. Like for example, I would have done, if I knew I was going to race, and the season started in like March, I would have at least done, and I'm changing tires. Let's say I'm changing tires for this season. I would have tried to have done at least one track day on the new tires by now, you know?
Well, yeah, if you're changing something, even if you change from one brand to another with the same size, they all measure different. So, yeah, you definitely want to test. Now, maybe a Friday track day for the Saturday-Sunday race weekend is good enough.
Right.
But, yeah, for sure, if you can get out there with different stuff. On the other hand, you know, they're all round and black, and they all have pretty much the same profile. And the vast majority of people make it all way bigger than it is. The reality is that I can change or not change people's clickers all day long, and they don't notice any goddamn difference at all, okay?
Right.
And so then they want to come in and tell me, oh, you know, I got this different tire, and it's pushing, and blah, 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 and they're 20 seconds off the lap. Yeah, dude, that's because you're spinning the tire. Yeah, right? I mean, okay, the first thing is like the exercising, you know, be in the real world. Who are you really?
Right.
What is your real level?
Right.
And
then make a plan based on that.
Yeah, reality-based
Try to get your mechanical stuff done as early as possible. Don't wait till the last minute, because everybody else is waiting till the last minute too.
Well, it's no fun to do the... Right? It took me forever to finally learn to do this.
What?
I have to go catch an airplane. I get up an hour early, and I go an hour earlier.
Right.
Because it sucks to get up an hour early. I hate that. Right?
But
it sucks more to be rushing through the airport and miss the fucking flight.
You have your...
Get on the plane, you didn't get to pee, whatever.
You get your smartphone with you, you've got your laptop, as long as the TSA doesn't throw it to the ground like they did to me in Virginia.
You could take a book.
Yeah, you could take a book. Yeah, even if the knuckleheads at TSA throw that on the ground, they're not likely to break it, although you never know.
Wouldn't that be funny? You get a book and the words all fall out when you drop it.
You're like, look at this. Now, what order are these
supposed
to go in? My
eyebook broke.
Right? And they're all over the floor. What's wrong with you people? Little knuckleheads. What was I going to say? Yeah, don't leave things till the last minute. Everything goes wrong if you leave it till the last minute. Everything, because you just don't have time to fix stuff.
Well, also... make a realistic plan.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, let's face it. If you can't do a lap on the same second, every single lap in the whole session, you don't need another shock.
Yeah. You need to get...
Right? You don't need data, whatever thing in a magic black box, a witchy-majiggy, you know, and you sure as a fuck don't need fancy short little levers, right, that are anodized whatever color. You need to fucking go to another track day and learn how to ride.
The guy in the last podcast we did that talked about with the stock R1M said, I left the ABS on.
Says, yeah, why not?
All the other racers take it off. He says, Yamaha put it on because it works.
It's legal, man.
Here's something else that
I'll check this out. I got one more thing on that.
Good.
Everybody that's got an onboard camera but not an onboard timer, you're a fucking poser. You're a fucking loser. You're a fucking sissy. You make me want to puke.
And I avoided mentioning Drew Carey's 101 big dick jokes because I was trying to clean up my language.
That guy's hilarious.
Oh my, have you read the list?
No.
It has to do with the satellite. It's NASA's using the Hubble telescope to find the end of my dick.
You know, the thing about you can see it from space no longer has any meaning.
Right? Because what can't you see from space anymore?
Yeah, right? You just right? Check this out. Tiki, the neighborhood dog.
Right.
Internet famous because he's on my blog, right?
Right.
Turns out he's also internet famous because you can see him on
Google Earth.
The car drives around taking pictures.
Awesome.
And you know what he's doing?
What?
Ignoring the car.
That's even
he's
better.
Cool, right?
Right? Exactly. My dick is so big, it doesn't return Spielberg's calls. Here's one other thing. I know we're running long. Here's something else.
We're running long on our new long
format. I told you we're going to try to bring it in under 40. Here's the other thing that I recommend. I've made this mistake before. Try not to show up at the track with new and untried riding gear.
Did I tell you my story of that?
Go ahead. Let's hear your story, Ed, even though I was talking.
You reminded me of a funny story.
Go ahead, funny story.
I had new leathers for the AMA season.
Go ahead.
And they get shipped to Daytona for me.
Wow, straight to the track?
Straight to the track.
Oh, boy, this is not going to end well.
And so I was busy at the track. I had lots of stuff to do. So right. It's time to go out. So I put my suit on. These are a little snug. Maybe they'll break in a little bit while I'm riding. So I go out on the track on my TZ, and I can't even tuck in. Like, it's pointless.
Right.
So I don't even finish the lap. I signal and I come in right away. Now I'm back at my pits in the paddock at my trailer. 250 GP practice is going on. The clock's running, right? So I'm trying as hard as I can to go 5 miles an hour in the pits, you know? And I get back and I put my bike on a stand and I need to get out of my suit, but it's too tight. And I can't get out. Fortunately, there's a guy, like, not too far. Hey, some spectator. Hey, you, come here, hurry. Pull my arm. Pull me out of the suit.
Pull
my
finger.
Yeah. And I jump in the trailer and I grab my other suit and I put it on and I'm like, give me a push. Boom. That poor guy is probably still wondering what happened.
Who the hell was that?
Thanks, dude. The suit.
Too small?
That's a great. It was too small and
even
you're
the stuff,
hosed.
Even the stuff that, I mean, you don't realize how hard you're working on the track. I have a helmet that works fine on the street. Every time I've tried it on the track, first two sessions, complete fog. Absolutely terrifying. So, as best you can, try to ride with stuff on the street and try to break that stuff in on the street.
Well, this is the beauty. Well, yeah, breaking on the street would be definitely good. And this is also the beauty of a track day.
Yeah.
We got one more thing, and then we got to close it out.
Okay.
So, if you check out my blog on my website, le-suspension.com, you'll see a recent post about the LE Media Conglomerate. And so what I'm going to be doing on there is doing magazine-style reviews of products I've used and products that I will be testing in the future. So you can look there for that stuff. Very soon, there will be a post about the Shoei X14, their new top-of-the-line racing helmet, which rocks. Full disclosure, Shoei sponsored me for many, many seasons.
Thank God.
And then, and then, of course, I'll be talking about some of this stuff in the Deep Thinking podcast. Like the example being when I got to ride the R1 at Phillip Island, and then we got a lot of data about data and traction control and whatnot, et cetera.
I think it's great.
So anyway, look for that. He's a genius. Name him Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo.
Aloha.